Gulu is a place very near to my heart, and as most of you know, I've spent quite a bit of time there since I retired, initially with Carol, and this was in response to a sense that Carol and I both had, that we should devote some time to overseas mission after our retirement. It all started about 50, it must be nearly 20 years ago now. We had been out to Kenya on holiday and met a driver who had been in northern Uganda at the time of the uprisings and the insurrections. And he told a story of how one morning, he was a teacher, and he told a story of how one morning some young boys armed with Kalashnikov rifles walked into his classroom and said basically, "Go now or we shoot you." And that's how brutal it was. And Argoy fled into the bush. And his is quite a story, but that's how it started. That's how our connection with Uganda first started. Carol came back a few weeks later and said, "Richard, I think the Lord might be calling us to spend some time in Uganda." Right? The moral of that story is be careful where you go on holiday. Right? It took a long time for us to sort out quite how we were to do this. But over 3 years, we helped with various projects and educational support for mission workers' staff. And it was really interesting because the last time we were there together in 2019, Joe Ovenden, who was the project lead at the time and is now back here in the UK in Sheffield, asked me to think about how we got more money or into the hands of the people who actually grow the crops. Because what was happening was we were teaching farmers to grow really high quality crops, and then middlemen were reaping all the benefit of that by not paying a premium to the farmers, but charging a premium to their customers. And I did a bit of research, and all the research said the way you do this is you set up some form of selling cooperative so that these growers can, in effect, sell their produce in a group and in bigger lot sizes, which then means people will be more willing to pay for it. And out of that idea was born Czech Chum. This time last year, I went back to close out this season of ministry and met up again with my dear friends Benin and Jimmy and Fiona and Val and Alan and Tony and Jolly and Susan. So I was actually very excited to see that this year's BMS Harvest materials focus on the work of the local partner, Justice, Livelihood and Health. And if you remember, we've heard a little bit about that when Benin has been to speak with us. Actually, next time Benin is across, what we should try and do, Philip, is try and get hold of Genesis, because usually the two of them come together. And Genesis is the guy who you saw in the video there, and he has a fascinating story to tell. His accent is even harder to understand than Benin's, but be patient, because there he has real riches to talk about. Genesis is an agronomist. And as you heard on the video, he grew up in northern Uganda during the time of the insurrection. Gulu was once Uganda's breadbasket. It has flat plains and fertile soils. But the agriculture there was wiped out. over 20 years of civil war and intertribal conflict. Resilient communities who could essentially sustain themselves were destroyed. And critically, 20 years was enough for a whole generation of people to lose their knowledge of how to farm in that part of the world. If you then add to that impact, the impact of climate change, so as you heard Barbara saying, the rains are no longer as predictable as they were. Very often today, the conversation is about survival and how people can face the current challenges without losing Uganda's spirit of hard work, love, generosity, and welcome. And Benin challenged us to think about what can we learn from Scripture to help restore people's hope and confidence. And these are some of the thoughts and some of the thinking that went into this year's BMS Harvest Resources. Jesus says quite clearly that we will have trouble and distress. There is no promise in being a Christian that you are going to avoid life's challenges. In fact, my experience says it almost becoming a Christian almost forms you into a magnet for life's challenges. And it almost feels like we seem to get more than our fair share at times. And distress comes in all forms, caused by unexpected crises and the adversity of the simple adversity of the daily pressures of life. The last time Carol and I were together there in 2019, every week we were there, someone said, I need to go up country because my brother has died and I need to bury them, or my father has died and I need to bury them. Time after time after time, and one of the comments we always made when we were out there is that death is far more part of life than it is here in Western Europe. You know, the pregnancy mortality rate is something like 1 in 14. 1 in 14 pregnant mothers lose their life as a result of pregnancy. And that's so impacted their culture that being pregnant is not a source of joy and expectation. It's a source of fear and dread. And there is no rejoicing until the child and mother are safe. You know, I remember Genesis coming into the office one morning, smiling broadly and saying, I'm a dad, I've got a new daughter. And that was the first we'd heard about it. You see how that impacts so profoundly. It's hard to control the distress that comes into our lives. And, you know, one of the things that people find challenging in this day and age, particularly in our culture, where we try and kid ourselves that we can control everything, we can't. And these things come from outside. I find it quite fascinating when I go to Uganda and see people working really hard on their food. And we live in a place where people have forgotten where their food has come from, largely. And I suspect our food supply is a bit more fragile than we would like to pretend that it is. That's not an encouragement to go to the supermarket and stock up and tin stuff. But that's our reaction here, isn't it? You know, slightest hint of a problem, what do? We go to the supermarket and hoard. Right? What was the first thing that happened when the pandemic started? The supermarket shelves were empty of toilet rolls. Where did that come from? There's a real challenge in Genesis chapter 8, verse 22. After one of the greatest and most distressing events in early biblical history, the flood, Noah's response to it, we hear a promise from God. As long as the earth endures, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night, will never cease. But they move. I was reflecting on this verse, and there is a promise of order and regularity, but there is no promise of absence of change. And we're seeing real change in Uganda. You know, you used to be able to tell what day it was almost by when it rained. But I was—I've got a couple of friends out there who keep in touch, and we swap Facebook messages or WhatsApps occasionally. And a lady called Helen, who used to be a housekeeper at a place where we stayed, said that the rain this year has been really weird, in that it was late, but when it came, they had as much rain as they'd normally have in 3 months in one month. And that's really messed up their planting season. Right? So that's food that should have been planted in July, August, September. That if you planted in July and August, they lost their crops. Because there was like the odd shower. And people thought, rains have come. Get out there and plant. And nope. They planted, and then there was 2 months of drought. And then the rain came down in torrents in September. It's almost as if some of the promises of God seem disrupted in these days of climate change. Now, climate change has happened in the past, and it will happen in the future. But it's different this time. There's something, people sense it, and you talk to farmers. Now, the one thing you learn about talking to farmers is they're never happy. It's either too wet, too cold, too hot, too dry. It's never just perfect. Right? I used to work in a company that supported the agricultural industry, one of the biggest seed companies in the world. And we used to say that out of every 4 years, there'd be one dreadful year, two okay years, and one really good year. And that seems to be about the pattern that most farmers historically have recognized. But we need to understand we need to understand that this is now having an impact on folk in countries which should not be short of food. There is no way on this earth that Uganda should be short of food. And yet, farming, particularly in the northeast, is getting very marginal. If you do not manage your land properly, your crops will fail and you will not have enough food to feed your family. When I was out there last year, this time last year, in fact, I was out with Genesis on a field visit. Bryony was with me and we were visiting Barbara, in fact. And Genesis said, just had news that less than 100 kilometers from Gulu, so that's like from here to Scarborough, less than 100 kilometers from Gulu, a family had been found dead of starvation. They'd grown their crops. They'd sold too much to pay their school fees or some medical bill. And they hadn't enough to keep them through to the next harvest. That's never happened before in Uganda. Never. Something's shifting. But we need to see that what appears as uncontrolled distress, as Benham called it, is still under the control and sovereignty of God. What blows me away when I go out to Uganda is you see people living in really tough conditions. But frankly, whose faith and trust in God would put you and me to shame? I always come back humbled when I listen to the faith and trust of these people. They have a list of things as long as your arm to complain about. And yet you hear remarkably little. You know, they live in one of the most corrupt nations on the planet. And yet very rarely do you hear people complaining. As human beings, we've got an unrevoked obligation. In Genesis 1:28, we are commanded to exercise stewardship and control over the creation as his stewards and image bearers. And we need to take that mandate very seriously to find positive approaches to the situations which we're now facing and the situations which folk in Uganda and other places around the world are facing. In Psalm 37 and verse 19, we read, "In times of disaster, they will not wither, and in days of famine, they'll enjoy plenty." This was actually God making promises to his people. We've seen control distress from humanity's perspective, but how does God see it? We've talked about Barbara. She's a widow. She's looking after four of her own children and seven from other family members. For her, uncontrolled distress has come in the form of disrupted rainfall patterns, wildfires, shortages of food. All these have made it hard for Barbara to raise her children and feed them and pay school fees and emergency medical bills. It's so easy in such a situation just to descend into despair. And yet, Barbara is one of the smiliest people I met out there. She has hope. She's got hope because Genesis and Tony, who works with him, have delivered training. Because she's now got an outlet for the good produce that she is producing. I've seen at first hand how hard she works and how she is able to raise her children. Now, you and I would view Barbara's life as hard work, physically hard work. You know, my back twinges just to watch somebody work in a field out there for, you know, hours on end. Days on end, planting things, weeding, harvesting. It is hard physical work. But these people don't complain. I'm just blown away. Now, JLH is very keen to restore hope to people like Barbara as they struggled with uncontrolled distress. And what JLH does, it uses its greatest asset. And its greatest asset is the network of small rural Baptist churches in the countryside around Gulu. And it starts with community mobilization. And Jimmy, who is the pastor at the church I go to when I'm out there, works with JLH to train the pastors. And Jimmy is fantastic. He's developed an oral curriculum because a lot of these people do not read very well, even though they are pastors. Right? So he's developed an oral curriculum that trains them in basic Bible stories and how to communicate them, but also in how to engage with and mobilize communities. And then Genesis or Tony will follow up and do training in agricultural practice. And then as the farmers start to grow, they're able to sell through Checkchum. And as they raise income, then very often they can afford a decent, clean well. So they use wet to come and sort out a drill them a borehole. Now you think about that. It's a wonderful virtuous circle. And what it does is it reduces the pressure for people to up sticks and sell up in their countryside and move into the city where they find there are no jobs. And so after 6 months, having sold their land out in the countryside and have given up their biggest asset, they're now left destitute on the streets of the city. Now all this, all the work that JLH is doing is reducing the pressure to do that and say, look, there's a sustainable way of living, a hopeful way of living in Jesus out in the countryside. In Acts 10:38, we read that God anointed Jesus of Nazareth with the Holy Spirit and power, and he went around doing good, healing all who were under the power of the devil, because God was with him. The JLH team share their faith in Jesus to do good as God has commanded. Genesis, right, which this is something which BMS don't talk about when they talk about Genesis. Genesis is also a marvelous evangelist. And many weekends you'll find him conducting evangelistic missions with various churches, not all of them Baptist, in the area around Gulu. He's an amazing guy. Circumstances never tell the whole story. They only tell what human eyes can see. But beyond this is the eternal God who is our refuge, and always, always he's present and expressing his love and care. The team in Gulu are confident, based on the experience with other growers, that people like Barbara and others like her will be part of restoring Gulu's pride in being one of Uganda's breadbaskets. We know that in this church we've given very generously to support recent challenges in North Africa, right? So in one sense, I don't want to pressure people into giving irresponsibly. But if you are able, then there are some offering envelopes and you can pop that in there, or there's details in the notices how you can support this campaign. And to be honest, BMS's work doesn't just go on at harvest time. It goes on all the year round. And the quality of their work on the ground is really, really worthwhile. In a sense, this year's BMS appeal is going back to a lot of the heartland of BMS. You know, I remember BMS appeals back when I was in my teens, which were focused on agricultural work. And this has always been one of the heart territories of BMS, because it's in promoting self-sufficiently, but it's all coupled with hope in Jesus Christ and the transforming work and love of Jesus Christ in the lives of people all around the world. If you can do nothing else, please pray for Benin and Chekchum. Chekchum is a real challenge to the team in Gulu because it's a business. It's not a charitable project, it's a business. And the way, and you have to run it as a business. And the people with the skills to do, you know, the people in the team in Gulu don't necessarily have those skills. You know, I've lost count how many times I've said, you know, you have to do your accounts on time or the tax man will charge you a penalty. So it's a very different way of thinking. And the team there is finding it difficult. Right? Now, BMS haven't said that in here, understandably. But this week, one of the BMS monitoring officers is actually going out there to help and to see how things are going on. Right, Chekchum is a fantastic idea. Please pray for its development and growth and success, because it will have a huge impact on the lives of Barbara and other people whom you see, you know, who you saw in that film. Thank you for praying for Uganda. Thank you for praying for Gulu. You know, I love these people. They are a fantastic people and most, most worthy of our support. And I commend to you the work of BMS in northern Uganda. And just thank you for the chance to talk about it. David.